Isaiah 13, this is all about the fall of Babylon. And the scenario that's presented here is that Babylon is going to fall suddenly, and there's going to be mass destruction all around Babylon. And out of all that, there is going to emerge a repentant remnant. Verse 12, I will make people more valuable than fine gold, even a person than the pure gold of Ophir. Septuagint, they that are left shall be more precious than gold tried in the fire. And a man shall be more precious than the stone that is in Sophir. So I think the idea is that those who do repent and turn to God are of extreme value to him. And this idea of gold tried in the fire in the Septuagint, this is quoted in 1 Peter 1 about us, that the trial of our faith is as if we are the gold tried in the fire. We are this remnant. But I think the initial intention that Babylon was going to be destroyed dramatically and therefore flee from Babylon, as Isaiah later says, and the Jewish exiles were to leave and to get out of there, Babylon would fall, and so therefore they were to leave and return to the land to restore the kingdom. This didn't quite happen as potentially it could have done. For one thing, they didn't repent, the Jews didn't repent, and they didn't generally return. And when the Medes took Babylon, well, it wasn't destroyed in the way that is described here. So all these things are reapplied and rescheduled and reinterpreted. For example, the idea of a repentant remnant, which will be as gold tried in the fire, is applied to all Christian believers today, according to 1 Peter 1, that it is the trial of our faith, which means that we are gold and that precious to God. You see the huge value God places upon us. I will make people, these are the repentant people, more valuable than fine gold, even a person, just one man, than the pure gold of Ophir. We have value to God. We are his precious jewels, according to Malachi, that he will assemble in the last day, or the day of judgment. We have value. Now, we live in a world that continually devalues the human person, that we are cogs in a big machine. Whether you are a relatively big cog or a relatively small cog, that is all you are. And we feel not appreciated, etc., in maybe domestic life, the workplace, just life generally, etc. And yet, we are so valuable to God. Our value to God is huge. This is why he paid the most valuable thing he could for our redemption, and that was the blood of his own son. But to return to what I said, that the scenario that was originally intended didn't quite work out. See verse 15, everyone who is found in Babylon will be thrust through. Everyone who's captured will fall by the sword. Well, when Darius the Mede took Babylon, sure, he killed Belshazzar, but actually he took the city, so the historians tell us, because there was a huge amount of support for him within the city. And although the king was killed, there was not mass murder going on. When it says, verse 16, the infants will be dashed in pieces before their eyes, houses will be ransacked, wives raped, this didn't happen when the Medes took Babylon. And the Nabonidus Chronicle actually records how the people of Babylon welcomed Darius or Cyrus by spreading green twigs before him as he entered the city gates. And the Cyrus Cylinder and the Babylonian Chronicles, they both describe Babylon as being taken, quote, without battle. And, yeah, it's all verse 17, I will stir up the Medes against them. This is what was going to be done by the Medes, that God would work in their minds to make them do this. And they will dash the young men in pieces, etc., verse 18. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, verse 19, will be like when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. In other words, there would be dramatic divine intervention to destroy Babylon. That's why Jews were told, the Jewish exiles, flee Babylon, lest you be consumed in her judgment. Well, they didn't. They did not flee Babylon. They were assimilated into Babylon, as you can see, really, at a later stage in the book of Esther. And Therefore, these judgments upon Babylon didn't happen as intended. I mean, verse 20, Babylon will never be inhabited from this time onwards. The Arabian will not pitch a tent there. The impression was that the Medes would attack Babylon, God would destroy it like he did Sodom and Gomorrah, and it would just be desolate. That's not what happened when the Medes took Babylon. The city remained standing there for a few hundred years. This just didn't happen. Verse 21, the wild animals of the desert will lie there, etc., be full of jackals, ostriches, and wolves and jackals, and so on. That's not what happened. It really isn't what happened. That's not because prophecy failed. It's because God has a number of potential scenarios. And the idea was the Jewish exiles repent, return to their land and return to God. Babylon gets totally annihilated. And maybe a repentant remnant of Babylonians would come and live in Judah and form a multi-ethnic people of God there. It just didn't happen. And so there was a different outworking of things. And of course, eventually, Babylon will fall. Because in Revelation 18, you read very clearly that Babylon is going to be destroyed in this way. And yet Babylon is reinterpreted. I suggest the Babylon of Revelation is not talking about a literal city in Mesopotamia. So I think that what you see here is the way God works with nations and also with individuals. He sets up certain potentials, but if we don't respond, and Judah didn't respond, they didn't repent, they didn't flee Babylon, therefore the next stage in the potential program doesn't work out. Now you see this in people's lives, see it in your life. You see it, it's very easy to see what how it works out. God may have a plan, for example, that you meet a guy while you're sitting at a railway station waiting for a delayed train, and this fella's homeless, and you give him a New Testament, you say, look, here's my phone number, mate. Read this. And the guy is a very educated fella, and he, why he's homeless, you don't know, but, he phones you later on, and he stutters, and you teach him, and you baptize him, and he says, you know, there's a whole load of people like me who are homeless. Not everyone who's homeless is a druggie or an alcoholic. Just people for whom life, you know, just didn't work out for whatever reason. And we prefer this way of life. But they're actually very interested in the gospel, but they don't want to come to a church. And you think, oh, sure. You start to get involved, but then, well, you get a girlfriend or you got to study for your exams in your job or whatever to qualify, go further up the ladder. And you say, oh, look, mate, you know, I can't make it this week. Ooh, next week I'm going on holiday, and all the week after that, well, my girlfriend wants me to go and see her parents. Better do that. So it doesn't, it sort of didn't work out. And then when you do meet with them again, and you baptize a bloke, another bloke, and they're very enthusiastic, and you think, take it to your church and say, oh, yeah, can you deal with it? Oh, yeah, but, actually nothing ever happens. And your girlfriend meets these guys and she's not impressed and says, you know, you shouldn't be mixing with people like that. You might get tuberculosis, you know, if you go too close to some of those people. I'm a nurse. I know all about that. And you think, yeah, okay, honey. And so it doesn't work out. But potentially, God had in mind much people, as it were, in that city. He had in mind for you to pastor a church made up of such folks, in a particular hall near that railway station that was available for very cheap rent. And he potentially had in mind that your girlfriend's brother, who was in the catering business, could actually do good food for those people very easily, because actually the bloke works near there. But none of all that happened. And you look back in your life and you think, remember that guy and those fellows I used to meet with, those homeless people, I wonder how they're going. Well, it doesn't mean you're condemned or damned. It just means that a potential didn't work out because you let life get on top of you. And so I think this is a tragedy for God, that he plans so much in such detail and yet it doesn't happen. Now, that is not to say that he fails or his word fails. It is man who fails. But we have here in so many of the prophets these sort of statements about potentials. And yet God has a way of fulfilling the essence of his word. Maybe let's go back to the example of those homeless folks. It was his intention that they should all come to his son. And okay, you failed. But one by one, he directed them to various people as individuals who did help them to come to Christ. But a long time later, many years later, over the course of the next 20 years, one by one, those people he had marked out did engage with the gospel and respond in different places, different towns where they moved to, but they did. So it's the same here, fall of Babylon. Well, yes, the essence of it, Revelation 18, will come true at the last days. And what about the repentant remnant who didn't actually repent? Well, yeah, they were to be more valuable than gold tried in the fire. Well, that then is applied, as I said, by Peter to believers in the first century and all of us, actually, who are going through trial that develops us as fine gold. Now, this helps us to make sense a bit more, not just of Bible prophecy, but of life and of why apparently things happen. That it's very hard to quite see why that happened. And, of course, it's partly that we don't perceive as we should, because we don't see exactly God's game plan. But it's also those sort of residual odd things that happen in life that you can quite perceive the meaning of. It's because human response was not as it should have been, either your response or that of other people.